You know, I was thinking about this last night. For the ancients, when we encounter a biblical text, there are four aspects to the way that we encounter it. First, we read it. But read doesn't mean the way we read the newspaper. Get the drift. It means read it. Pay attention to every word. Who went up the mountain with Peter, with Jesus? Huh? And why just those three? A high mountain by themselves, transfigured. What does that mean? Well, Matthew explains a bit to us. His face shone like the sun. His clothes became white as light. And then Moses and Elijah. Why just Moses and Elijah? Who? What's so specific about them? And you think, why? Why Moses and Elijah? Well, the law and the prophets. And they were conversing with him. And Luke says they were conversing about his exodus, meaning his passion. Because the light of the passion and the cross are over this event. Remember, well, probably you don't really because it's not here, but this comes right after Peter's first confession of faith. And then Jesus' prophecy that the Son of Man is going to be handed over to the scribes and Pharisees, and they're going to torture him and kill him. And on the third day he'll rise, and Peter says, far be it from you, Lord. That's terrible, stuff like that. And what does Jesus say to him? Get out of my way, Satan. Because right now you are an obstacle to the Father's plan. And you're talking like man, not like God. Out of my way. Nobody is going to stop Jesus from doing the Father's will. Nobody, not even one of his close friends. So anyhow, then it says, in a part that, or because I guess it wouldn't make much sense, 6 days later, it says in the Gospel, this happened. Well, if you're alert, when you get 6 days, 3 days, you say, well, this is probably being modeled. This is a fulfillment of a Jewish feast. And it is. Now, we don't have a lot of time to get into that. But my point is this. When a gospel writer, when a biblical writer, actually other writers too, but for us right now, tries to narrate a story, they want to open up for us the depth of it. Jesus went up the mountain, he was transfigured, and they all got excited and they came down. Is that it? We're talking about God made man. You know, is that all? No, this is a mysterion. And so then you've got to think how, so you'll notice all these allusions to sacred history to help you penetrate this event. Too late to think of another example, but here's Smith and Jones at a cocktail party, right? Anybody want to finish the story for me? But the interesting thing is, you see, I say that he went across and the room and shook hands and the other took it. He said, yeah, okay, fine. And I say, but they've been enemies for 12 years. And then, you see, the interior of that is revealed to us. Huh? It's the same. If we were around at Calvary and I said, that is the salvation of the world, I'd be right. But I'd only know that because I penetrated to the heart of that event. You understand? The trouble with most modern history writing is it's porcelain. It just covers the surface. As they say in philosophy, it deals with agents but not with subjects. You know, subject is interior action. Okay. Now, to explain that interior dimension, I make allusions to all sorts of things which are totally familiar to you. I hope. They're not, because we're biblically illiterate, and this is the whole movement since Vatican II, is to try to get us, pick it right up. And then they should have put it in there. 6 days. Well, why 6 days? Well, 6 days, we just happen to know. It could fit for either of two feasts. One is Yom Kippur, and then 6 days later, the Feast of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Tents, the Feast of Huts, whatever you want to call it, Sukkah. Oh, what do you know about that? That would mean that Peter made his confession of faith on the day of Yom Kippur, and Jesus manifested himself on the day of Sukkot, which is quite logical. Now, Luke says 8 days later, and we're not going to get into that right now, but what I'm trying to help you see is read the text is already an achievement, right? What is he saying? What are all these, it's called in literature the poetics of this thing, the resonances, the illusions, the things brought up by way of, illusion, identification. And then Moses and Elijah. And then Peter says, Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I'll make three tents. I'll make shalosh sukkot. I'll make three sukkots right here for you. And we'll have Sukkot right here. Sukkot was the feast when they commemorated God's kindness and care for them in the desert. It's the last of the three feasts. Huh? There's Pesach, Passover, and then 50 days later, Shavuot, the Feast of Weeks, which is Pentecost, and then in the barley harvest, then this feast, you see, Sukkot. This is important because you see how gentle God the Father is? He gave them all that. Those were his feasts. He gave them those. And now he's bringing them up to another level so that we can understand who Jesus is. Okay? And so when he was speaking, a bright cloud cast a shadow. Oh, boy. What's that? A cloud over a mountain? Rain. Not more than that. It's Sinai, isn't it? And so this is, and you do this, so they do this. They bring lots of things in to help us unpack this. So there's a cloud there now, just like the cloud that only Moses could get into, remember? And so, and then comes a voice. Now, if you remember Exodus, when the voice starts in chapter 19, the people say, that's heavy. God's voice and all that, the fire and the clouds and the... Moses, you go. Tell us what he wants and we'll do it. We'll stick around back here. You know. Here, they're all in the cloud. Something's happened. Okay? And when this, then comes this voice. This is not... I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. This is my beloved son. My favorite. Listen to him. And that is the heart of the whole thing. Listen to him. The disciples heard this. They fell prostrate and were very much afraid. Then Jesus came and touched them. Said, rise, don't be afraid. And they looked up and they saw only Jesus. The law and the prophets had become Christ. So, and then the rest, don't tell anybody about this till after the Son of Man is risen from the dead, because this is all a prophecy. Why? Because there we are, confronting for the first time this mystery, in this dramatic way, this mystery of God and man. Men don't shine like that. Except once in a while, you get that. You know? Seraphim of Sarov, great Russian saint, lived in the bush, out there, the serious bush, you know, I mean, 200, 300, 400, 500 miles of it. And so way over in the eastern part. Well, he came back to his monastery. And he had a great reputation. People used to come to see him. And so this newspaper, this very devout newspaper reporter, went to interview him. I don't have time to tell you the whole story, but I'll tell you two things about the story. First, as he was talking with Seraphim, he asked him, tell me, Father Seraphim, what is the meaning of life? And the reporter said, his face began to shine so brightly, I could hardly look at him. And Seraphim said, the whole purpose of life is to acquire the Holy Spirit. But it's, so he's shining, you see. Now, what's the deep meaning of this? So all we've done so far is read it. Now you got to reflect on it. That would be the next step, called meditation. So you go back over this now. You know, what's going on here? With the help of that reading, you know, and the commentaries, whatever you want. But it's not that we're trying to get an A in theology. We're trying to be touched by this mystery, which the whole church does today as the entrance into the mystery of the Passion. So the bright cloud is the whole mystery of the Passion, overshadowing them. And so you penetrate that. And as you, what happens then? That's the third step, but the third aspect, you pray. You pray, Lord, show me, show me, show me. I don't get it. Because you see, in our culture, we get the words, we repeat them back, you get A. This is a joke, but I guess it's okay in Mass. The definition of a university lecture, it's that process by which the notes of the professor become the notes of the student without passing through the mind of either. Doesn't always happen that way. See, that we can't do with this. This is sacred. This is the Word of God. And then finally, the last is contemplation. When we gaze, remember now, this is the fourth of the new luminous mysteries, right? So you could read this text, and then with Our Lady, you know, you gaze on Jesus, radiant, in the eyes of faith. Huh? It says in Ephesians, I pray that the Lord will open up the eyes, give you knowledge of himself, and open up the eyes of your mind so that you will know him. Know him in this life. Perfectly? No. But remember, faith is a way of knowing. So you got to work. It's so precious, isn't it? So what is the mystery of all of this? You see, it is that in this man, there is God. He is true man and true God. They never get intermixed, but they never get separated. He is true man and true God. So when you think about the true man, you see, he climbed up this mountain and then he was radiant. Of course. He's light from light. True God from true God. And there, here, it radiates right through his flesh and even his clothes. Now, as in the gospel plan, this comes right after the first prediction of the Passion, right? The plan is to strengthen their faith so that when they see him crucified, you know, tortured, disfigured, mocked, they say, that's the one who shines. No, they didn't. They all ran away except Our Lady and John. But you see, that can happen to us too, can it? And we have to say the same thing. That's the one who shines. That's God shining through that human flesh. That's the flesh I receive at this altar. So as it's in the liturgical rhythm, it's to strengthen our faith to really meditate on the Passion. We're going to go through the discourse on water, the discourse on light, the discourse on life, because this is cycle A this year. Who is this person? Only God can show you. I could give you all an exam, you'd all get A. It doesn't mean you know anything. It just means you can write out the right answers. And so it's an invitation. Come, come. Now just ponder this text, you know, turn off the TV, ponder this text, think about it. Pray to me, and I will open it up for you. That's the whole process. St. Thomas says, if you do that, you will be let in on a secret of what he calls delectationes ineffabiles, unspeakable delight, to understand. So, that's to strengthen our faith for Lent, but also to give us a knowledge, a deeper knowledge of Jesus.